Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The best way to protect our security and to pressure Iraq's leaders to resolve their civil war is to immediately begin to remove our combat troops. Not in 6 months or 1 year, but now.
Now, that was September 12th, 2007. That now. And don't look now, Barack Obama, but that grassroots army that helped propel you to the nomination because of statements like that could turn on you, too, as Obama has refined, clarified, or amplified some of his positions over the last few weeks. Denizens of his Facebook site and even his own site, MyBarackObama.com, have started to debate, not just support. For example, here's a commenter named Josh on My Barack Obama just this morning. A few hours ago, he writes, Barack made a commitment to support any filibuster against legalizing warrantless wiretaps. This is a commitment he can still keep by joining Dodd and Feingold until the offending article is removed. He also said he supported the overall compromise bill. He can keep true to both of these statements, support the overall bill, but also support a filibuster of retroactive immunity. If so, he maintains his integrity. And on Facebook, where the popular Barack has 19,000 friends, an organizing campaign against his embrace of the FISA compromise with immunity for the phone companies who took part in warrantless wiretapping is taking shape. Quote, a Facebook group to accompany the Senator Obama, please no telecom immunity and get FISA right group on MyBarackObama.com. Senator Obama, we are a proud group of your supporters who believe in your call for hope and a new kind of politics. Please reject the politics of fear on national security. Vote against this bill and lead other Democrats to do the same. Again, that's on Obama's own Facebook page. Now, this may not be the biggest challenge the candidate faces, but it's at least a sign of how the power of social networks to help this candidate might become the power to lobby the candidate when he veers from the wishes of his base. For example, on Iraq, we played that clip from 2007. Well, he held two conferences, news conferences, last Thursday, one to, quote, refine his position on the war, to say he'd pull troops out only as makes sense to the situation. The other to do damage control over the refinement. This is from the second news conference on Thursday.
Apparently, I wasn't clear enough this morning on my position with respect to the war in Iraq. I have said throughout this campaign that this war was ill-conceived, that it was a strategic blunder, and that it needs to come to an end. I have also said that I would be deliberate and careful in how we got out, that I would bring our troops home at a pace of 1 to 2 brigades per month, and that that pace we would have our combat troops out in 16 months. That position has not changed. I have not equivocated on that position. I am not searching for maneuvering room with respect to that position. What I said this morning and what I will repeat, because it's consistent with what I've said over the last 2 years, is that in putting this plan together, I will always listen to the advice of commanders on the ground, but that ultimately I'm the person who is making the strategic decisions.
So there is Senator Obama refining his refinement. That wasn't good enough for this reporter with a follow-up question.
You just said that when you used the phrase refined policies, you did not refer to the 16-month timetable. So does that mean you can tell us today that you will not change the 16-month timetable?
Here's what I can tell you. I will bring our troops out at a pace of 1 to 2 brigades per month, and at that pace we will have our combat troops out in 16 months. That is what I intend to do as President of the United States.
Keyword intend. Let's talk about the state of the presidential campaigns with Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek. Hi, Richard. Welcome back to WNYC. It's been a while.
It has. Great to be with you.
Now, for those of you, of our listeners who were in a barbecue bubble on Thursday and through the weekend, what was this refinement of Obama's Iraq position exactly?
Well, let me just, I was there, and I played a little part in this. Let me just set this straight and set the scene for you. He actually came out on the tarmac in North Dakota to talk about the jobs numbers. This was supposed to be talking about the economy, and he delivered a statement, and then he threw it up to questions, and it was my question, I'm afraid, which triggered this whole thing, because I said, well, people are suggesting, your critics are suggesting that you are having second thoughts about your 16-month time frame, and is there anything that you've seen on the ground that would make you rethink that? Now, it is true, absolutely true, that at every point that Obama has talked about withdrawing from Iraq, which is all the way through, he has always said that he would have to look at the facts on the ground, that he would talk to the commanders on the ground, but that he would order the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to have a new mission, which was withdrawal. But
I've heard him asked on the cable channels repeatedly, and I think you were just indicating this, repeatedly, you have a 16-month timetable. Mm-hmm. What if things are going badly in a way that makes you think it would not be either safe for the troops, which he says is his number one criteria, has to be safety for the troops and withdrawing them, or safety for the people of Iraq.
Right.
And he's always said, I would take into consideration conditions at the moment.
Right. And remember, in the primaries, he took a lot of heat about those caveats from a couple of candidates. First off, Bill Richardson, who said, no, we must commit to a hard and fast date for withdrawal. And secondly, later on, from Hillary Clinton, who was saying this is kind of fake and it's not real and that kind of thing. So he actually took some heat from the people in the primaries. But what you have now at this stage, and this is a candidate who's always said, in his own phrase, that you've got to be as careful getting out as careless getting in. What you have at this phase is people looking for this narrative that he's somehow moving to the center or hedging in some way. Well, those hedges were always there. His approach on the war always was cautious, and I think, frankly, he's a cautious politician on a whole range of things.
Yeah, but
the question is there anything new now? And I think what's new is the scrutiny, the focus, and the phrase that he used at the end of that first press conference, which was that after he goes to Iraq, remember he's planning a trip to Iraq, that he would then talk to people and then refine his policy. And that refine language got people thinking, oh, well, then he's backing off it.
What did you make of that refined language? He wasn't then saying that he was refining his position right now. He was just saying he would continue to consult and continue to refine as kind of a normal ongoing process.
Absolutely. I think this is a guy who's always fine tuning things. And the question is, does the principle change? And the 16-month idea was always a goal. 1 to 2 brigades a month. Well, there's a difference between 1 and 2. And that changes the time frame, whether it's 16 months or 26 months. And by the way, 16 months is a very long time. It's not like withdrawal happens immediately. So I think that's what he was trying to get at, but he phrased it inartfully and then came out later in the day with a second press conference, because the stories were already spinning wildly about how he was backing off his commitment to withdraw.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's a little bit of thick-headed media looking for a story, even though people who've been on the campaign trail should have known that he's been talking about this all along, taking conditions into account as
they progress. Well, I tell you, Brian, there are a lot of people who are new to the campaign trail at this phase. You've got new reporters coming in who haven't followed him before, who maybe didn't even follow the primaries very closely before.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of those people don't have the sort of knowledge, the memory of what he said when he first came up with that timetable and those plans. And, you know, you can spin these things any number of different ways. But you could have done that when he first came up with this plan a year ago. You could have said, well, this isn't a hard and fast commitment.
Well, one of the people I'll be interested to hear from is a guest we're going to have later in the week, John Edwards, who was very specific when he talked about withdrawing from Iraq, that there has to be a level of risk that we're willing to live with.
Mm-hmm.
If we stay in, there are certain risks. If we pull out, there are certain risks. And that we have to have the stomach to watch things go badly in Iraq because it may actually be for the greater good to not just stay bogged down there. So John Edwards can be here later in the week. I'm going to be curious to hear what he has to say about Obama's position. But the other issue, which may actually be bigger, is FISA and this bit of revolt taking place among Obama's online supporters. First of all, explain what Obama did on that issue.
Well, FISA had previously said that he would support a filibuster of the roughly the current legislation as it's come down through this compromise. There are really two issues here. One is the issue of immunity, retroactive immunity for the telecoms companies that cooperated with President Bush's warrantless wiretapping program. And the second issue is about the checks and the balances, the idea that this program needs to go forward for national security reasons, but it should have a court supervision of one kind or another. So the question is, what supervision is best? What's the legal framework for that? And faced with a compromise that has court supervision but also gives retroactive immunity to the telecoms companies, Obama said, to me, the court supervision is more important. To many of his supporters, though, this idea of immunity, this legal immunity for the telecoms companies, is unacceptable. And this is where the dispute really lies.
Have you been watching this Facebook movement take shape among Obama's friends?
Yes, I have. I think it's very interesting. Listen, if you have a people-powered campaign, then some of the people can turn against you. Now, he does have a lot of Facebook friends, and you've got to acknowledge how many people are criticizing him. But that's the very essence of the kind of campaign he has set up.
But what does it involve? A petition or something less formal? The thing I read before from his Facebook group sounds like there's a petition circulating.
Yeah, of course, we're talking about an electronic petition. So people signing up for something to support a group is a kind of petition. And it's something that the campaign was sufficiently worried about that he put out his own statement. They also put that statement, I think, on Daily Kos it was. But they, you know, so they've had to engage with the sort of grassroots opinion as it's coming up here. That doesn't mean to say that he shifted his opinion, though. He's trying to explain his position better.
Right. And I wonder if you think this is a threat at any level to his grassroots-based campaign. I mean, at very least, it says that in an era where online grassroots support can make a campaign, it can also, if not break it, become an independent movement that the candidate will have to deal with when they don't like his actions. And that, I would imagine, would continue very much so. What happens to these 19,000 Facebook friends when and if he becomes elected president? Then, I imagine, to most of these people who have an activist bent, rather than sort of Obama worship, it becomes issue-oriented, and it can trigger a kind of movement. You know, they may not have the money of the traditional lobbyists, but they may have a lot of numbers.
Yeah, and I think the campaign is taking this seriously, and seriously because it feeds into, again, this broader narrative that somehow he's tacking away from his positions in the primaries. And that has an immediate impact. I mean, of course, you're right, it could move forward into a thorn in his side if he wins the White House, but more immediately, he needs internet enthusiasm because that's where he's drawing the vast sums of money that he'll need to go forward between now and the convention and beyond, especially now that he's not taking public money after the convention. So the kinds of criticism he's hearing, the kinds of doubts that people are expressing on the internet do pose a challenge. But again, the guy's got about 1 million donors, and most of those have given $100 or less. So he's got room to deal with this, but you kind of have to deal with it early and engage. If you are engaging with people and offering them a platform on your website to discuss these things, then you have to talk to them in that space too, and that's obviously what we're seeing here. He's going to have to continue to do that. One statement isn't going to be enough.
Has there been any censorship on My Barack Obama?
I don't believe there's been censorship on this issue. I mean, I do think there's a constant monitoring of it for offensive comments and that kind of thing. But I don't think there has been any censorship that I'm aware of on this issue.
Right. Not that I've heard of. But again, on the actual position that he's taken on the FISA bill, he is allowing the immunity for the telecoms, which is a hot-button issue, because there is greater court oversight in this bill of the government's ability to engage in wiretapping or other kinds of looking at information? Because I thought some of the activists were also unhappy with how much looking at information, looking at our data, the government can do under this bill, and they don't want Obama supporting that.
Yeah, and again, that's also an area where he basically disagrees. He says that there are national security reasons for this program to move forward. Again, I think a lot of his own supporters who oppose his position dispute that and don't trust the Bush administration on any claim of national security for this kind of program. Some of them also say that the previous legislation had oversight, so this new law wasn't necessary at all, that it's all a fig leaf just for telecoms immunity. But Obama seems convinced that there is a national security reason for this program and that this court supervision is sufficient. There is a check and a balance. He's also promised to review this whole thing when he gets to the White House, if he gets to the White House, and he puts a great deal of emphasis on the review of the telecom company's behavior that is going to come out through an inspector general's report, which is, frankly, a fairly toothless type of investigation, but is more of a fact-finding report. He says it's not a perfect compromise, but that the program needs to move forward. And that may be politics, but that may also be his understanding of, again, national security.
So, listeners, I want to know, do you think Obama is right on the issue? Maybe he's doing the smart, pragmatic, necessary thing here. Maybe this is not a flip-flop, as some are saying, so much as a refinement, as he used that word as what he would do with respect to Iraq, maybe as conditions evolved in this legislation, and he's in the Senate and he has to vote up or down, that the immunity for the telecoms was worth it for the additional court oversight of information gathering by the government's intelligence agencies, especially the NSA. What do you think? Let's talk about the issue. We've been kind of retracing the evolution of some of these things over the last week because probably a lot of you have not really been paying much attention to the news during the 4th of July week. So this is some of the politics. This is some of the strategy. But it's also the positions on the issue, of course, at the heart of it. So let's talk about the issue. Our temporary phone number is still 646-778-3729 for Richard Wolf from Newsweek today, 646-SPUDRAY, if that's easier for you to remember, 646-SPUDRAY. Get out those potato guns and call 646-778-3729. Now, before we go to a break, I want to play one more Obama clip. And this is kind of to make the point that not all these things that are getting into the news are flip-flops as they are being casually reported. And Richard, I think you made that point with respect to Iraq. We made it here the other week with respect to his positions on the Supreme Court rulings, on the individual right to bear arms and on the death penalty for child rapists as opposed to only for murderers. Those were positions that surprised a lot of people when he articulated them again after the Supreme Court rulings, but they were positions that he has held in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing applies with this because some people in Obama's base were unhappy and surprised to hear him endorse President Bush's idea, if you can call it President Bush's idea, of embracing faith-based groups to help carry out social programs. So here again, Obama on faith-based groups and his support for them, as he articulated last week.
As I've said many times, I believe that change comes not from the top down, but from the bottom up. And few are closer to the people than our churches, our synagogues, our temples, and our mosques. And that's why Washington needs to draw on them. The fact is, the challenges we face today, from saving our planet to ending poverty, are simply too big for government to solve alone. We need an all-hands-on-deck approach. I'm not saying that faith-based groups are an alternative to government or secular nonprofits, and I'm not saying that they're somehow better at lifting people up. What I am saying is that we all have to work together.
So that was last Tuesday. Then there was a bit of a firestorm. And on Saturday, speaking at the AME, the African Methodist Episcopal Church's General Conference, he said this.
Now, I've talked about faith-based groups and individual responsibility for years. Again, I know some of our friends in the media might think it's some new political positioning, but I say it because I believe it, because I've always believed it, because I believe this is the only work that
we can do as individuals, that this is the work we are called to do as Christians.
So, Richard Wolff, it seems to be the same kind of story over and over again. I mean,
yeah.
we've talked, this is probably the third show that we've done in a week and a half on this kind of thing. Charges that Obama is tacking to the center. In the FISA case, it probably applies. In the other cases, it may not apply, but this is the media narrative that's taking hold.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to take my word for it. Go read The Audacity of Hope, because in that book, he actually talks about supporting the death penalty for child rapists.
That's right. We read that quote.
If you look at faith-based stuff, well, he makes it very clear, even in his first book, which was written before he entered politics, but also there's a whole chapter on faith in Audacity of Hope, and he makes it very clear that he supports the social ministries, the social work of churches and religious communities in general. And in fact, that's how he comes to his own personal faith, and it's very much interwoven with his work as a community organizer. So it's actually true. This stuff has always been there. He even talks nicely about President Bush in The Audacity of Hope. I think personally that if it weren't for his opposition to the war, people would have taken a very different view of him in that primary process, and maybe people on the left of the Democratic Party would have had many more doubts about him. He has consistently taken, if not a centrist perspective, then a moderated perspective, where he goes out of his way to seeing things from the other side of the aisle. Sometimes that involves compromise, and sometimes it doesn't. But his positions on these key things, whether it's death penalty or the individual right to bear arms or on faith-based action, they have always been there. And I know politicians always say, I've always said this, I haven't changed. But we have to be careful about the flip-flop narrative, because it's very much something that came out of the 2004 election. It wasn't entirely true then, and here you've got two very different candidates who operate in very different ways. I think it's a very narrow prism to look at two fairly complex candidates.
Right. Just give me 30 seconds before we have to take a break on how, if at all, you think Obama's support of faith-based initiatives is different from President Bush's.
Well, there are two key things. One is that he doesn't believe that you can discriminate. If you're accepting federal money, you cannot discriminate as a faith-based group in terms of hiring someone because of their religion. That's a big difference. One of the reasons this was controversial was precisely because churches could hire according to religion. Obama says that's illegal, that's not allowed, and he wouldn't want that to move forward. So that's a very important thing. The second thing is proselytizing. These groups are not allowed to proselytize. That's the definition of that is kind of vague, and he wants to put people on the ground to help people get through that in terms of the red tape and what that means. But that's a very important idea. Still, it's not going to be enough for people who don't want religious groups taking any federal money. He thinks that's a good idea. So there are people who are on the secular left who won't like this, but he has always been someone who sees religion and the Democratic Party is interwoven.
We will continue in a minute with Richard Wolff from Newsweek. Still a lot to do with him, including talk some about the McCain campaign, which probably actually has bigger problems than these ones pertaining to Obama that we've been talking about. We'll take your calls that are coming in and your comments at WNYC.org on Obama's FISA position. And we'll ask Richard Wolff, who's become something of a star since the last time he was here, what it's like to be the main news guy for Olbermann on MSNBC. So stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Newsweek senior White House correspondent Richard Wolff as we talk about the state of the presidential campaigns. 646-778-3729, our persistent temporary phone number here, 646-SPUDRAY is the shorthand. And we're going to take some calls now, not on the politics primarily, but on the issue of the FISA compromise and whether Obama did the right thing. Ellen in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. He absolutely did the right thing. I may not be the typical Obama follower, if there is such a thing, But the problem is that the Bush administration has totally screwed up everybody's credibility about security. There are some security issues. But according to the Bush administration, you know, it's totally a blanket thing. So nobody can, you know, pick a real one, Obama or anyone else.
Ellen, thank you. And Richard Wolff, what is the quote, real one? What actually will change with respect to what the government can do in terms of this data collection, information gathering on our communications under this bill that that maybe they can't do now that they could do before?
Well, they can. Essentially, the Bush administration has been acting illegally, and that's what the legislation is designed to change. The oversight of these courts, the FISA court, is pretty minimal. I mean, it's incredibly rare that they reject an application for this kind of eavesdropping. But the idea is that you have some minimal review, and that's the checks and the balances, the principle being upheld. I actually don't think a whole lot will change because we don't know the full extent of the program, and there seems to be two elements of the program. One is the data mining process, which is very hard to sort of get a warrant for because it's just this giant dragnet of information. And the other side of it is the actual eavesdropping that emerges from that, so of individual numbers and calls. As I said, I think that the Bush administration has been carrying on regardless. It just brings it into line with the law or changes the law to allow what it's already doing.
From our comments page, I'm having a hard time understanding the way this campaign is being viewed and covered. Many of the problems this country faces today are the result of the need for instant gratification and the inability to see beyond the next news cycle. Obama has a somewhat strong relationship with his base, the left. Unfortunately, many on the left believe that he must cater to them uniformly rather than implement a winning strategy. McCain has a weak relationship with his base, the right. Being the unknown quantity that he is to many Americans, Obama's best move is to stay – whoops, I have to click on this to continue – is to stay away from extremes, to exhibit nuance and flexibility over dogma. So
it's a great comment. And the typical pattern for candidates is to move to the center after the primaries, and I think that's why we in the media, I think, are trying to put Obama into this box and say, well, that's what he's doing. I think one thing has changed, to be fair, and that's the tone. The tone of what he's doing now is more considered, more pseudo-presidential, in a way that in the primaries it was more about the red meat. But if you really strip away the rhetoric, the positions really haven't changed. This is a guy who was always a sort of nuanced politician, and he took a lot of heat in the primaries for that.
But you're saying on the one hand that he hasn't changed very much on most of these things, but on the other hand that it's the responsibility or the expectation normal for a candidate to, after he wins the primary, to tack to the center. But if Obama is supposed to represent a new politics, mm-hmm. where he says what he means rather than tacking this way for this election and tacking that way for that election, then doesn't that blow something important about him?
Well, that's certainly the danger of it. But I think there's a difference between tone and substance. I think there's a difference between giving a speech where you do three paragraphs on saying how the troops are going to come out immediately, and it's talking about 16 months. You do one paragraph on the caveats. Of course, we need to be responsible. We need to make sure we talk to the commanders. And then coming round to the general election and spending maybe half the time on the withdrawal and half the time on how cautious and responsible you're going to be. That's tone. The policy isn't any different.
But then the very next quote on the website says, Obama is nothing more than a snake oil salesman. Nothing more, nothing less. Iraq, no pullout, no end. FISA supporting Bush's plan on civil rights. So obviously he's got an issue to deal with. Now,
yep.
That first poster – well, no, let's just go to another caller. Actually, Catherine in Manhattan wants to challenge you. Catherine, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, Ryan, thank you for being critical. I think that your guest is biased, and he tipped his hand when he said about 10 or 15 minutes ago, when Obama's in the White House, and then he corrected himself and said, if. I think Obama makes the Clintons look principled, and I think that's sad. I think Obama should be impeached before he even starts in office because of the way he's changing. I think it's lying to the American public, on the one hand, to say that you're going to wage war against corporate America and be for change and reform, and that you're a principled, honest guy. Now he's changing his positions, in my opinion, completely the opposite way, almost looking like a Bush groupie on the periphery. And I think that journalists like your guests need to be far more critical and not tip their hand and inject their personal opinion, but look at the candidate objectively on behalf of the American populace.
Catherine, I'm curious, did you vote in a primary?
Yes, I did.
May I ask for whom?
Mitt Romney.
Uh-huh. So when you hear, and are you a McCain supporter now?
No, I'm not.
Rather what?
Well, I'm undecided now, but I'm comparing some of the libertarian candidates.
Like Bob Barr.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So Richard, you want to respond to Catherine?
Sure. I have been careful throughout to say that that I'm not sure if he's going to make it to the White House, and I wasn't correcting myself, but if you're talking about someone's plan when they become president, I mean, sometimes the language gets twisted. So I was not indicating any bias or expectation about whether and who will become elected. There is a question mark that she raises, I think, the caller raises about Obama's criticism of corporations in general. And it is jarring, I think, to many of his supporters that he is giving these big corporations a free pass here when it comes to this immunity question on the warrantless wiretapping program. He has tried to come up with a balance. This is his argument that the national security issues and the principles of checks and balances are even more important than the corporate welfare or corporate attacks, the aspect to this. And there are different things he has to weigh up when it comes to this piece of legislation. Again, the balance may not be right for some of his supporters, but it is going to be a balance on any of these things. And, you know, that's what politicians have to do. In the end, legislators have to decide whether to vote yes or no. There's no maybes.
Mike in Charlottesville says he has the Netroots perspective on the Obama Facebook issue. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yeah. Actually started the largest group on mybarackobama.com. We've got over 2,000 members at this point. And the problems with this bill aren't just telecom immunity. Telecom immunity is troublesome in and of itself. I Barack Obama is wrong saying that he is not going to be listening to special interests anymore. He's going to provide opportunities for people to participate in this democracy. And when we did participate in this democracy, he stiff-armed us. He told us all. He just reiterated his stance, which is essentially that he's got to stand up for the big telecom corporations. But the larger perspective here is that the entire bill is bad. I don't know what checks and balances your guest is talking about, because there are none in this bill. It grants all the authority to do all this wiretapping without warrants, without any targets, without cause, to the executive. Now, the last time we had this kind of authority, we shut it down with the FISA courts, because Richard Nixon used it to spy on political opponents and activists and all the rest. And that's exactly where this will go. Maybe not with Barack Obama, but probably with another president at some point in the future. You cannot put unfettered power in the government's hands. You simply cannot do it. And it's got to stop.
So, Richard, do you want to dispute his characterization of the bill at all?
Yes, I understand that there is court supervision in this program, so I don't understand where he says that there's totally unfettered executive power here.
If the Attorney General posits that we need to wiretap, it's done. There's no court order. There's nothing that nothing else required.
But well, we have a different understanding of what court supervision they have to take out of this legislation.
Now, Mike, let me ask you one thing about triggering the Netroots. You said you You think you started the largest Obama group where? On Facebook?
Oh, there's no doubt I did. They just did a 1,200-word article on me on page 818 of the New York Times. And the group was started on Barack Obama's own website, mybarackobama.com.
And so how much – I mean, if he has 19,000 Facebook friends – I think Richard
has a million Facebook friends.
He's got a million Facebook friends. So is this relatively a drop in the bucket, these people who are starting to talk back to him over this FISA issue?
Well, I'll tell you, he's got 100,000 people signed up for mybarackobama.com. That's his own campaign website.
Right.
And our group is the largest. We've got over 20,000 members. The next largest group came to be when he launched the Fight the Smears effort.
Right.
And that group has 13,000 members. So, I mean, far and away we're the largest group. There's a lot of unrest amongst hardcore Barack Obama supporters because we really feel let down. He was supposed to be the candidate of change. He was supposed to be the guy that wasn't going to cater to the special interest. And this bill could be so much better if he'd just wait. It does not have to be passed today. The FISA bill that was passed in 1978 and amended many, many, many times still exists. And that's what would be enacted. And under that bill, if there is a national emergency, you can wiretap for 3 days before getting a warrant. But then you have to go to court, and the court provides the oversight. That works absolutely fine. That system can stay in place until he attains the presidency, and then we have a Democratic majority in both the House and the Senate and a Democratic president that can put in some good legislation.
So, Mike, one thing real quick. How do you see the role of you and the people in your group if Obama is elected president?
Well, this FISA issue is going to pass us by tomorrow. You know, the vote's going to be taken, and what's going to happen is going to happen. And at this point, I'm not optimistic that we're going to change Barack Obama's mind. And even if we did change his mind, I'm not necessarily optimistic that we will be able to change enough minds of other Democratic senators to stop this horrendous bill. But what I do hope to do with the 20,000 people, I think we're all pretty much like-minded, or most of us, the vast majority of us are like-minded, in the idea that we don't like the way Barack Obama is moving away from the people that won his primary.
So you see it as a lobby group.
Yeah, I'd like to change the name to Barack's Better Angels and hold him to the progressive agenda that won him the nomination.
Barack's Better Angels, says Mike in Charlottesville. Mike, thanks a lot for calling us up on this. You know what? We didn't even get to the McCain campaign today. And I think we're going to have to save that probably for tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow we'll start with an in-depth look at the McCain campaign, which probably actually has bigger problems because while Obama was refining his position on FISA, McCain was refining who runs his campaign altogether. So we'll talk about that with someone else. But Richard Wolf from Newsweek, just before you go, you have raised your national profile since the last time you were on this show. I see you all the time with Olbermann on MSNBC, who's become kind of, you know, the great liberal hope on the cable TV networks in opposition to O'Reilly, who he's on at the same time as, and so on and so forth. And he brings you all on all the time, mostly to talk about what's going on at the White House. How do you see your role on that show? Is it objective journalists reporting the facts and then Olbermann does his commentary, or somewhat as a kind of, you know, a feeder of information into his liberal comments?
Well, of course, Keith does his thing, and he does it incredibly well, and his line is often questioning and probing, and sometimes he's testing out his theories and his views. But what I try and do is root what I say in my reporting, and so I hope and I try to make sure that it is fact-based or something that I can bring to it as a reporter. Look, the show is great, and it has a very loyal and growing audience. It's an honor to be part of it, but you know, we play different roles. We fulfill different functions. Keith is very much his own man, and I come to it from from the perspective of someone who's out there doing the everyday job. The profile part of it is just a side effect of what happens when you're on a popular show with a very talented anchor.
Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. The death of Esmeen Green on the waiting room floor. Is it an aberration at Kings County Hospital, or are there other patients who collapse and are also ignored? Stay with us.